Well, good morning, everybody. It's Tuesday. Thank you for joining Bitcoin Veteran Spaces number 260. We're here for your listening pleasure. Welcome in, welcome in. Usually we talk about Bitcoin. My name is Bob Van Kirk. I'll be your host this morning, joined by producer Eric and co-host Texas Toast. Today is Tuesday, September 9th, 2025. And let's take a look at the time chain. We got TC up here. Thank you, sir, for this amazing dashboard. We are at Bitcoin block height number 913,910 with the Bitcoin price sitting just above $112,000, which means you can pick up 890 sats for each US dollar. Get it while it's hot. Awesome. Couple of announcements. As a reminder, if you'd like to participate, we'd love to have you up here. Just make a request to come up by hitting that little microphone button in the bottom left. If you can't speak but would like to chime in, please do leave a comment in that little purple pill. Hopefully that'll light up here in a second when someone posts. And remember, this is a Bitcoin-only show. Second announcement. Once again, Bitcoin Veterans is having our second annual summit on November 10th and 11th. In Nashville, Tennessee. Day one will be the conference day. Day two is range day. You'll be able to fire some firearms, which is pretty cool. If you're looking to attend, please do visit bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. I think we're still taking some speaker requests, panel topics, and we also need volunteers. So please feel free to visit bitcoinveterans.org/summit2025. Before we hop into the topics today, I want to say good morning to everybody. Texas Toast, how are you this morning, sir?
Doing all right. It's a beautiful day. It's warming up, though. I was excited for fall to be in full force, but Texas always has a couple teasers, and
we got Matrix Toast this morning a little bit. Yes, second summer is coming in Texas. TC, thanks for joining us, sir. Good morning.
Oh, hey, good morning, guys. Full disclosure, I am not a veteran. Massive respect and appreciation to all you guys for your service. Just got to get that out the way.
Appreciate that. Let's see, who else are we looking at here? Eric, did you want to say good morning? I think we got Neil too. Eric's the producer. If you guys haven't followed him, please do. Rearranging the stage a little bit. BFP, how are you, sir? Oh, BFP. What's going on, man? Captain Trips, how are you?
Good morning, Bob. It's a beautiful day here, at least in the Washington DC capital region. And, fall is here. Fall is coming. It's, I'm excited for the conference here in a few weeks and hope to see some of the vets make it out here.
Yes, sir. Thanks for that. AC, good morning.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Another beautiful day here in Colorado. No complaints and, looking forward to the chat this morning.
Outstanding. Trying to get Neil up on stage. Eric, maybe you can help me out with that. And your mic's live, Eric. Coleman, good morning, sir. How are you?
Hey, good morning, everybody. I am doing fantastic. No complaints on my end.
Awesome. Well, we did have a good discussion yesterday, but also on Friday, we talked a little bit about maybe what not to do with self-custody. And I'm hoping just with the name of the room, it's probably not going to take up the entire hour, but wanted to kick off today with some talk about this NPM compromise and just maybe lay it out for the listener. What's going on with it? Does it matter? You know, there was a billion downloads they're reporting. Found that hard to believe. And I'm guessing a lot of that has to do with shitcoins that run through browsers because it's a JavaScript thing. So, TC, go ahead, sir. Thanks for again for coming up, and would love to hear your take on this.
Okay. Sorry if I hog the mic for a few minutes here, because I think it's important to get a better context. I was really taken aback by the reaction from like the whole Bitcoin scene in my feed to this NPM thing yesterday. There was a lot of shock. There was a lot of fear. There was a lot of worry, and there was very little clarification and context being given about what exactly happened and what are the actual like implications and what are the actual surface area of this sort of hack that occurred. So I took an interest because as a web developer, I've used NPM for years and years and years and years, and it's a core piece of the toolkit. And JavaScript is one of the fundamental languages, coding languages that's used to do a lot of stuff that everybody uses every single day. So I thought I first needed to kind of like look into it and understand it better myself. And when I did come to understand what had happened, I was a little shocked with the reaction that was had by the whole community, because it's an overreaction in my opinion. So real quick, JavaScript runs in your browser. It's one of the few scripting languages. It's basically the primary scripting language that runs in your browser. It's why websites far and wide and all kinds of things at, you know, on your browser are using JavaScript to be able to make things interactive and, functional and look really cool and do all kinds of amazing things. So JavaScript is kind of like a ubiquitous coding language. If you use the internet, you're using JavaScript in your browser. NPM is, stands for Node Package Manager. Node is a particular sort of variant of JavaScript. And essentially the way to understand this, it's basically a repository of a bunch of packages of code. Let me help break that down. You might have heard of GitHub. It's basically like a central place where a lot of different software projects are stored, including Bitcoin itself. And we have these centralized places where people coordinate on developing code. And that also allows end users to download things in the case of open source stuff. So NPM is kind of like this open source repository of a bunch of little code packages. Think of it like a library of a bunch of little toolkits that other people have made. And you install these things in your project, what you're building, in order to add particular functionality to your project. And just for context, I think it's close to 3 million, it's about 2.5 million NPM packages that exist out there. So this is not a thing where there's just like a small number of these core little packages that people use. There's just millions of them, and anyone can make them. Anyone can upload them. There's a system built into NPM. So you can easily see how many people have downloaded this and use those metrics as a sense of, is this something new and untested, or is this something sort of battle tested and a little bit more sort of like adopted out there. So basically what happens when you're building a website or a web application or doing something with JavaScript, you typically install NPM and you download the packages for the functionality that you want to use. In the case of this thing that happened, a particular developer that maintained, I think it was 18 different packages, got a phishing email from some hackers and bit the hook and basically had his NPM account compromised. And subsequently, the 18 packages he maintains got updated by the malicious people with malware that essentially tries to steal your crypto by swapping out addresses at the point of doing transactions. So this was kind of really important for me to establish when I first heard everyone saying NPM is compromised, JavaScript is compromised. You know, JavaScript has a lot of faults and, you know, valid criticisms of it, but JavaScript is not compromised. And NPM is not compromised. This was literally a specific developer's account and 18 specific packages out of the 2.5 million that are out there. I looked at the package names. I did not recognize any of them. I have never used any of those packages. And fundamentally, if a piece of software had never used any of those packages, it's not even a discussion. Okay. Now, the real risk is after these hackers had breached this guy's account and updated these 18 packages, what would have needed to happen is a piece of software, a developer who's building something, building a wallet or something, would have had to update one of those packages to get the malicious update after the hack and before NPM took these things down, because NPM did take these things down. So right now you can't download any of these modified, updated malware packages. So I haven't locked down the exact hours of that, but my understanding is it's something around like a day. Like, this guy got breached and then NPM shut down the things. I don't know. It might even be a couple days, but just think of it as literally this small window where, you know, your favorite wallet that you use or whatever would have had to, first of all, use one of these packages in their product, update the package in that window of time, and then put out a new version of their software with that updated malicious thing in there. So, I mean, all of these things put together, this is like a very small surface area of real problems, okay? And then I dug in it a little more, and it looked like it was very oriented around Ethereum and Solana stuff. And so, I don't know, man. I really feel like there's an understandable kind of divide between, you know, people like myself who work with this kind of code on a daily basis and have kind of a little more, you know, nuanced mental model of how all these things work. And then the general, like, users out there, like all the Bitcoiners out there that are basically using these tools. And then something like this pops up. And when you hear the words supply chain attack, and that was one that really irked me, because, like, that is a terminology that we use when we talk about where did you get your hardware wallet and where did you, you know, literally who made it and how did it get into your hands from the manufacturer and how do you verify it's legit? You know, I think the valuable thing in this is to realize the era that you live in, and the software tools that you use are almost entirely not, let me rephrase that, to a great extent use these little third-party packages. And maybe a neat way to understand that in the context of Bitcoin is look at Bitcoin, how Satoshi didn't just create every component of Bitcoin from scratch himself. He didn't innovate all the composite pieces that he used to make Bitcoin. He used other achievements from other people in the past that were functioning and working and used them like components and parts. It's like, you know, you look under the hood of a car and there's all these different pieces and they were not all manufactured by the same person. It's just the nature of the world we live in. When you build sophisticated things, they have component parts. And so it's one of these things where this is a potential reality for anything that uses software, is that some component part that's under the hood gets compromised, and then that compromised update makes it into the code of the software that you're using, and then you download that new version that has the compromised piece in it, and then problems occur. It's one of these things where people should just be aware that that's part of the process of how software gets made. And what it requires is you've got to have some scrutiny and some skepticism about where you get the tools that you use, because you, at the very least, should have some sense that the people creating the tools that you depend on care about these things. We're also in an era where a ton of people are literally vibe coding, jumping on an AI, telling it, I want to make an app that does blah, 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 and they don't even know anything about the technical stuff under the hood. And we're hearing a lot of stories in the last 6 months or a year about software coming out that has incredible vulnerabilities and massive security flaws. And so it's just the onus is on you, end user, to be skeptical and have scrutiny and have standards and take your time and assess things the best that you can. There is no magic wand to make this problem go away. You have to just be aware that you're living in a time where these sophisticated tools that are magical to use have component parts under the hood, and the person who made it didn't make all those component parts. And this is something I think that will pop up again and again, but I think it's important when you get a big burst of concern and worry about wallets getting compromised, it's important to take a step back, pick it apart, and understand exactly what's going on there.
That was a great intro. And I really do think the community, the reaction really stemmed from this just deep desire to get away from the knots and core discussion. But let's go to AC, and would be curious to hear your thoughts as well.
You know, I raised my hand early on in TC's riff, and, you know, he covered a lot of what I was going to dive into. So, yeah, that was pretty amazing, TC. But I did want to rewind back to the beginning, and that's how everything started. And, you know, I think a lot of people are looking for action items or actionable information that they can utilize on their Bitcoin journey. So I want to kind of dive into that phishing attack that kicked it off. Because that's something actionable for Bitcoiners. If you look at it, and I posted screenshots up in the nest for people to look at, you know, when you decompose that phishing email, the thing that jumped out at me and probably should jump out at people because we're getting, you know, bombarded by these things on a regular basis is that sense of urgency that was framed in the message, you know, that enticed him and eventually got the developer to click on that link to update their 2FA. So really it's one of those things that people need to just kind of focus in on. When you get these random messages that may look legitimate but weren't expected, is like TC said, to take a breath, zoom out, and hey, is this legitimate or is this real? Because if the person had ignored that or identified that as a phishing email and moved on, none of this would have happened. The second thing that I think people are looking for as far as actionable is, you know, looking at your security stack and how you conduct regular transactions. You know, with air-gapped hardware that has a screen built by a reputable company that is open source, and we'll kind of rewind back into open source later, with a secure element or that has an ephemeral configuration, something like a seed signer, would have absolutely mitigated all of this. You know, I think it's a little bit of sensationalism associated with this NPM, hack, you know, and the big one there is air-gapped hardware with the screen. You know, the attack focused on swapping addresses at the time of transaction. With air-gapped hardware at the screen, you can verify the address offline, air-gapped prior to signing. A lot of these other crypto projects, and shitcoins, as a lot of people like to call them, you know, they're not necessarily human readable. You're looking at an Ethereum or Solana smart contract with a bunch of gobbledygook, and it might take somebody a significant amount of time to decompose that on, you know, what is a smart contract doing and what are the addresses going to? And that's the beauty and simplicity of Bitcoin is it doesn't have all of that extraneous information in a signed transaction. And then open source, you know, I posted something in the comments. TC was talking about this as well as the response from the NPM community. Once those libraries or packages were getting updated by the malicious actor. And really, it's the open source community that identified it within a matter of minutes. And that's why you want Bitcoin tools, whether they're hardware or software, that are open source or at least source viewable, because there's a community of people who are looking at and reviewing things. The flip side of that is you have a closed source hardware, closed source software that no one else but the developers are looking at. And just imagine the response time it would take if the information there wasn't transparent to anybody and everybody with an internet connection. This potentially could have taken days, weeks, or months. You look at other attacks or other breaches, and they're not disclosed for months or years. So that's the beauty of open source and why I think a lot of Bitcoiners embrace open source for some of that level of protection. I mean, I'll admit I'm not a dev like TC, so I can't read all the code. I might have done it in the past, but it's comforting to know that there are people like TC out there and many others who do have that know-how and are reviewing the code for the benefit of all Bitcoiners. And I'll kind of land it. Thanks.
Can I pile back on there just real quick? If you use best practices in your self-custody, you avoid so many of these situations, and you can look at it and laugh it off if you want to. Like serious. Proper custody, if you do it air-gapped, makes you immune to these things in many respects, at least as far as, you know, your keys and your signing. You know, it's one of these things that you have to kind of start to build an awareness of, even as a, you know, a non-coder person. Like, notice the version that you're using of software, and you need to be the captain. You need to decide when it's time to update, and don't feel pressured to update until you've verified from the person who's created that software that there's an urgent need to. You know, this is kind of like a weird thing touching on like the node war stuff. It's like, nobody is forcing you to update your node. If it's working, like, leave it alone. Same thing goes here for like the, you know, the tools you use with your Bitcoin. Like, really, you should basically have that frame of mind. You should figure out how to use these things. And when you have a good setup, you need compelling reasons to make changes, and you're not as affected at all by all these kind of day to day, you know, breaches and hacks and things like that that happen on the web. Because if you're using best practices, your keys and everything are safely air gapped away from all that.
Yeah, thanks for that. And I do think one of the good things that come out of that, this whole thing, is explaining to people that they should be verifying their addresses on those hardware wallets when they're doing a transaction. Puppy, thanks for coming up this morning. See your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just put two things up in a nest here. And it's just like to take a step back and understand. It's like, fucking great. Now something else I gotta worry about when orange pilling. And even, you know, been here 8 years. First time I ever heard the term NPM. All right. And this is when you're in spaces a lot. And so when we're out there, this is just a reminder for anyone else when you're talking to them. And, you know, even like last year, terms like ordinals and inscriptions, it's like every year you're learning something new. And this is just something when you have to understand, even people that are here know sort of what they're doing. This, you know, you get sort of blindsided by this. So you can understand the hesitancy of anyone coming in and say, oh yeah, just, yeah, go ahead and self-custody, and you just leave them at it. Yeah, go ahead and do it. It's easy. How do you not get this? Well, I was just reminding people, yeah, sometimes stuff like this comes out. So thankfully, you know, guys like TC and AC and you know, BTC Sessions that were quick to jump on this. I didn't know if TC or anyone, he talked a bit to this, but it does seem, that the Bitcoin only Sparrow Wallet and Cold Card and Wasabi, all the Bitcoin specific type stuff seems to be the least affected. It seems to be more.
Well, no, it's that they're not affected at all. And look, look, I gotta be honest, dude. I love BTC Sessions to death. That guy is amazing. I was shocked at his, thing, because he has such wide reach, and he was coming out with a really like severe warning, take alarm kind of vibes. And then I saw the sort of tirade of all of these different wallet makers saying, our wallet software is not affected by this, da 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 da. And it's like, I didn't see anyone clarifying in any of that stuff. Because if you... Sorry, Bob. Every time you open your mic, I hear myself echoing.
No, I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you know, in his defense, and I agree with you. I think that unfortunately he was informed of this during a live show. And so he's just kind of going off the cuff, and due to his reach, it just kind of spread out there like wildfire. So I don't think he intended it to be like that. Unfortunately, he hadn't gotten the time to do like the full research. It was kind of like, you know, off the cuff stuff. And obviously something he knows about. And so go ahead.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to say, like, you know, there's a lot of wallet software out there that doesn't even use JavaScript. I mean, most wallets shouldn't be using JavaScript. JavaScript is, really for the browser mostly. And then there is some server side use of it, but it's basically like, you know, I think sort of coming from a more clarifying, place would have actually sort of made a lot of those statements self-evident, you know, and that's the kind of thing here that kind of triggered me yesterday, is that everybody's saying NPM is compromised or that JavaScript is compromised. And these are, you know, widely used massive systems. And when you look at the actual details of what happened here, this is actually very tightly scoped. And you know, and that's where, you know, I feel for the plebs who are just like, oh great, what now? You know, you're just like waking up to Monday and like you're being told, oh no, your wallets are compromised. It's like, that's a shock that I don't think like people need to have. And, you know, until it's really something like that, you know, it's kind of a crying wolf thing. I don't blame Ben for jumping on the story and wanting to spread it if necessary. But I think it's important that everybody try to clarify. And Pubby, you don't have to like understand this stuff deeply. You should know that I'm gonna be shocked if any actual Bitcoin tooling is impacted here. Because like I said, if they run some software that uses one of these NPM packages, and there's only 18 of them by this specific developer out of 2.5 million, they would have had to update with the malicious code after the hack and before NPM took it down. And I believe that's probably literally like a couple days max. And so this is a super tight window in which very specific pieces of software would have needed to be incorporated and then released in someone's product. And I don't see it as a real sort of probable problem.
Well, then specifically now, it should be all patched up and good to go. I mean, anybody that was using a malicious version of this NPM packet, you would assume has patched it up with the newer non-malicious version
Or rolled back to the pre-hack versions. That's the neat thing about all these repositories. You can always get the older version of these things. Version control is really cool that way.
Yeah, I did want to go back to AC. I see your hand. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I just wanted to kind of rewind back to something that you had mentioned as far as verifying addresses. I just added a comment in the bottom right corner. Another takeaway for me is, while this attack was mostly unsuccessful on shitcoin terms and likely not successful at all on Bitcoin terms, the takeaway here is, you know, these bad actors are actually doing their homework and increasing their level of targeted sophistication. You know, they look at Bitcoiner, I'll call them TTPs from a military perspective, you know, our tactics, techniques, and procedures. You know, a lot of the videos, Ben Sessions included, verify your address, you know, and he used to say, look at the first couple letters and numbers, look at the last couple, make sure that they're good to go, and then you're cleared hot to send. In his video yesterday, he did say, hey, during this time of uncertainty, verify the entire address. One of the things that these malicious actors had implemented is that they included an algorithm that would evaluate the correct address that you would put in. And then they had a list of 40 addresses that they controlled, and they were looking for ones that were, you know, graphically appeared to be as close to the actual address but with one of their targeted addresses. And so really what I'm saying is, their level of sophistication is increasing, and, they're watching our actions and our response actions to events like this to up their level. And so the takeaway for Bitcoiners is always be upgrading your, you know, personal security stack and your security model. Don't rest on your laurels thinking, hey, I've got, you know, my Bitcoin secured and I'm good to go, and let me focus on something else. Always be studying things. Take events like this as lessons learned and lessons observed that you can implement into your own lives. Because really, you know, this is probably the worst that the attack from this is the worst that it's going to be, and they're only going to get better. And so, like I said, people are looking for things that are actionable. This is another one that they can take into consideration. Are you not even verifying your addresses? Are you verifying, you know, certain portions? And are you verifying them on a screen offline on a hardware device that is not connected to the internet? All things to think about. Thanks.
Yeah, good stuff. And I do think that, you know, this CTO at Ledger, who kind of sounded the alarm on the quote unquote supply chain attack, did have a good message later on where he said, and I put that up in the nest, if your funds sit in a software wallet or on an exchange, you're one code execution away from losing everything. And I think that that is why we talk about self-custody. But as you guys have been discussing, as we've been discussing, there are pitfalls. And so, you know, our hope is you guys see through all the noise and, do this stuff safely. So, good topic. Does anybody have any other, thoughts on this? Go ahead, DC.
Yeah. One more thing. I mean, what AC said can't be repeated enough. This comes back to a phrase I use regularly called best practices. And best practices is basically the best that you know how from what information you have available, and that's going to evolve over time. Best practices for me is I have literally three different times that I verify the address in the process of creating, signing, and then broadcasting my transaction. Because best practices to me is to use Sparrow on a desktop where I have my XPub and I form my transaction, and I'm checking the address that I'm going to be sending to there very carefully the whole way through every character. And then I export the unsigned transaction to my signing device where I review and verify that address once again and sign. And then I bring it back to the Sparrow to broadcast and I verify for a third time. So you get a good setup that's actually like best security practices, and you're going to be confronted with a direct opportunity to just do things in the ultimate way. I seriously like tell myself, like, this bank of TC, you know, and everybody's going to have their own, like, you are your own bank. Like, you need to take this seriously, and it's absolutely pays dividends to spend an extra minute or two making sure that where you're sending things is correct, because there's no undo and there's no customer service to call, and every transaction's permanent once it's confirmed. So just, you know, it's part of a kind of like reinforcing the understanding of what's happening. You should kind of want to go through that verification ritual every time you transact just to reinforce those concepts.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of, you know, setting goals or writing down, you know, being a former banker, policy and procedure. It's like, are you following procedure? And I think, you know, military vets probably have this same, ethos, right? You follow procedure and you do it for a reason and you practice it. And so I think those are really good points. Anybody else have any other thoughts on this topic before we move on to a couple other things that I wanted to hit this morning? I think we're going to talk a little bit about this U.S. House Resolution 5166, CBDCs, Bitcoin. I know that stuff can be a little boring, but I think it does kind of, maybe cast some vision for maybe what's to come, coming up. And then also, we got a couple other things that were on the docket, and also in the comments, Putin accused the U.S. of using crypto to urgently address the declining trust in the U.S. dollar. So that one might be interesting. So, wanted to see if anybody had any other thoughts on the NPM compromise, any thoughts on what I just brought up, those other two topics. All right, I'll get out the crickets. No, I'm just kidding. Is everybody asleep this morning or what? I didn't get to say good morning to Neil because I couldn't add him earlier. Good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm doing good. That's really good stuff. I think in AC we're saying. It's really cool to hear that broken down. We did.
Your mic was a little bad. We're going to bring up Puncher as well. I'm guessing he has some thoughts. Hopefully can get him up here on stage again, having a little problem this morning adding people to the stage. But, we can really take this wherever you want. Go ahead, Puncher.
Hey, Bob. Good morning, guys. I wanted to, shift just a tad. It seems like, yesterday, and I'm going to get to it right here in just a second, but it looks like Pentagon officials are proposing a departure from protecting the homeland and the Western Hemisphere at the expense of, you know, the Asia Pacific. That came out in a policy paper yesterday that's a huge paradigm shift. Not sure if you guys saw that or not. I'll try to post it in the nest. But, a friend of mine is the commander of the Indo-Pacific, Admiral Sam Paparo. And that is his area of command. I don't think people quite understand if it's just a section of the policy that came out yesterday. That's a massive shift in how we're viewing, I guess, our military responsibilities. So,
I mean, honestly, Puncher, it seems like a recognition of reality, and kind of what's going on because, sorry to get it too far off topic, but this, you know, I trained for those scenarios and going over there, and the job that I was going to do, and it was probably the toughest ask you could, you could ask for to try to go head to head against China, protect all these, you know, small islands and all these shipping lanes. It's a freaking nightmare. And it can't be done, you know, to an effective level. And I think they're just seeing that there's a lot more juice to squeeze, around here in South America and Central America.
Absolutely. I think we're heading into a multipolar world and it's a recognition of that. And that gets to the point about what Russia said about us trying to, you know, kind of wither away our debt, through stable coins. And that's what we're doing. I mean, it's not a secret. The fact that they're calling us on it is, it is what it is. And I think that that's what we're going to see playing out here over the next year or so. I don't know how that turns out, right? In the global South the goal is dollar hegemony. So, in places that we didn't have access to dollars, the global South, Africa, you now will, and you also have access to Bitcoin, which is great for Bitcoin. I don't know how great it is for those countries and what the second, third, and fourth order effects of that will be. Typically us exporting our debt and our inflation worldwide has not played out well for the countries that, you know, that it ended up in, but we shall see. But that is the plan, and the fact that Russia just said it out loud shouldn't surprise anybody.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point. We kind of touched on it yesterday in my next comments here about Canada. I think we often forget, like, this joke of Trump saying that Canada was going to be the 51st state. They're rich in resources, and as we move out of other regions, and to your point, Puncher, about it being kind of a multipolar world, You know, you could see where Canada becomes even more important. And if you look at it, I mean, they are really struggling. Inflation's high. They just gave stimulus to a certain segment of their population. Their population is really in trouble based on all the immigration that they've had over the last couple of decades. And they really have no national identity. So it's that part's interesting to me, just being our, you know, quote unquote closest ally and one of our bigger trade partners. You really can see how things are shifting. Tao, were you wanting to comment on this topic, or should we let Wade go and then we can circle back to you?
No, Wade. Yeah, I had something else.
Just wanted to say, what Texas and what Puncher are hitting on there is from my opinion, 100% correct. For anyone who's ever spent any time on or around the Korean DMZ, I mean, that's a quagmire. That's a nightmare. I mean, that place turns into like a hot war zone in there. I mean, it's the most heavily mined and fortified, land border, on the entire planet. And I just don't. For us, you know, strategically kind of redeploying or retrenching here in the Western Hemisphere kind of does make some sense, considering where's the win in a hot war between China and the U.S.? We choke off their oil and air components, and they choke off our rare earth materials and minerals. I mean, I don't see where's the win.
Yeah, and also, you know, you have to consider, it's like, well, are we giving up on Taiwan and chips? Well, no, we just acquired 10% of Intel instead. So I think it's interesting to see, you know, kind of the chips moving in some of these areas too. In places where traditionally we've said, like, hey, we can't let these things go. Now, whether we let Taiwan go or not remains to be seen, but I do think it's a super interesting topic, Puncher, and yeah, thanks for bringing it up. Does anybody have any other comments on this one? Go ahead, sir.
It's just one data point. I live about, you know, a baseball's throw away from the new TSC manufacturing plant in Arizona, and it is massive. And they are building that thing so quickly, you know that they're in a hurry. But that Taiwan Semiconductor plant in, I think it's in Glendale, Arizona, off of I-17, looks like a city. So we're not dilly-dallying on trying to pull chip manufacturing, here into the United States to kind of offset what could potentially happen in Taiwan. And I think this is just further evidence of the reality setting in that we're entering into a multipolar world. Those alliances are monetary and trade alliances, and it's going to come down to kind of pick your side here. I just hope that we're smart on our Bitcoin strategy as a, I guess, the Western alliance, you would say, because I think that that's the stronger money, and ultimately the stronger money wins the day.
Yeah, yeah, hopefully ICE doesn't raid that chip center too.
Yeah, we talked about Hyundai yesterday. So appreciate that. Anybody else have any other comments on this? And I do want to say, maybe, before we do move on, guys, this is your show. I'm just trying to, you know, kind of steer the ship a little bit, and do appreciate when people like Puncher come up and give us some of these perspectives that I think are relevant to all of us as people who are interested in Bitcoin. So Tao, let's circle back to you. Did you want to bring up your topic as well here?
No, I just wanted to go back to what you guys were talking about earlier. I was trying to get up here as soon as possible because you guys were talking about the whole best practices, and I just wanted to give my opinion on that, and I was like trying to get up really quickly. So
feel free, go ahead. It's an open show, so we're all good. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, so some of my best practices is, I guess the first one would be, whatever setup you're gonna do, make sure that it's not too complex where you're not able to get back into your, you know, coins, or if the people that you trust, like you're giving the keys to as well, that it's not too complicated for them. So that's the first thing. The other thing that I do, cause I'm pretty paranoid with this whole thing from the very, very beginning. I was like, how can I really ensure that if, you know, I'm going to get into this and I want to make sure I protect it fully. So the second thing would be, to have a pristine laptop. Like, I literally bought a brand new laptop just for the sake of my Bitcoin storage. Installing only the bare minimum software, whatever I need just for that storage. It's not used to browse the web, any websites. It's not used to check my email. It's not used for anything. It's literally just, you know, buy a brand new computer and then install the necessary wallet software, which is what I use to Sparrow. And that's it. I don't use it for anything else. Cause that way you'll, prevent from accidentally downloading something that may be, you know, malicious. One thing to do, and I think not many people look this far deep, into it, is when you're doing a, Bitcoin transaction, there's so many checks that you can do. And some people might feel that it may not be necessary to do the full check and their everything. But when you're moving large amounts, you really want to be sure, right? So there's a few ways, right? Of course, the first way is anytime you, you know, paste the, destination address, you're always concerned, right? Copy and paste that whole JavaScript or whatever, script that may be used. Once you paste it into the window, that actually reflects the address that you wanted to send it to. That's one check. The other check is, of course, when you sign it through your device, like your CoFi device, it also gives you another confirmation. So, hey, this transaction that we're generating, is going to be sent to this address. Now, does that address also match to the address that you want to send to as well? So that's two checks. The very last check you can do on top of that is, and this is where, like, okay, I mean, you already checked it twice, so I have to check it again. It's like you're using additional sources to check, right? Because if you're moving a large amount, you want to be sure that it really works. And so the third check would be actually you have Bitcoin core software installed on your computer, right? On your laptop. Like you go to bitcoincore.org, right? You download that software. You use that to just open the transaction file that has already been signed. You open it. You haven't broadcast, right? You open it and you can check that as well to see the destination address. So you have three checks from almost like three different sources, Sparrow, CoCard, and Bitcoin Core. So with everything all confirming that, hey, this is indeed the address that's sent into, then you can feel pretty safe because like it's not doing anything. It's just doing a read, right? After sign, after all that process, it actually does an additional, you can use there's an option to file open on Bitcoin Core. You can open your transaction and view it. So I think if you do all those things, it should be pretty good.
Yeah. And everybody's got their own setup. I think it's good. Again, we were kind of talking about, you know, just policy and procedure. Follow your own rules. If you have a good setup and you're comfortable with it, then don't go outside of that policy and procedure because hopefully you've had a well thought out policy and procedure and you can carry it through and not make, you know, that's one of the things Ben was saying yesterday on his live feed is like not to make quick decisions. And I think that's a really good idea, right? To slow down, think about what's going on. Check your surroundings. you know, there's all these things. And so I think, you know, if there's one good thing that's going to come out of this, it's these reminders, right? Things that we can learn. And it was kind of the goal on Friday, right? To talk about some of the pitfalls of self-custody so that people can learn from mistakes. Now, you know, this show, we have it, maybe to draw some people in, but, you know, TC really laid out, I think, the truth and the signal, you know, and when you really look into it, it seems like only maybe a little over $500 worth of, I think, shitcoins were actually compromised from this attack. So the sky is not falling. Everything's good. But learn from this, so that future compromises don't, put you in a position where you're making quick and fast decisions that could, result in a loss of your stack. So, good stuff. And it's fun, guys. I love this, forum where we can come together, talk about kind of this technical stuff, but then also, you know, some of the, things going on, globally that I think we're all somewhat interested in just because of the implications on Bitcoin. Some of this geopolitical stuff is certainly interesting. Hopefully we're not boring you as a listener, but we do this every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern. We'll do it again tomorrow. And, before we close it out here, kind of wanted to go around and see, you know, we can have other topics here if you guys want or continue in on this NPM, not so big of a compromise. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I wanted to make a comment earlier when Puncher was here and you guys were talking about the dollar hegemony and how that works. More of a question actually, because, you know, my basic understanding, it's not enough, right? I need to understand a little bit more. So we were talking about the goal of spreading the dollar, all across the world so that it's going to be used by every country. And if that's the case though, wouldn't that mean that there's going to be so much dollars out there? And wouldn't that also imply that, hey, it's kind of like inflation? Like, I'm not sure if I'm getting it right, because the more dollars that are out there, the more that everybody's using it, doesn't that also like signal to people, like, wow, it's everywhere. And we understand that when you have something that's so much of it, that it's inflation, it's not worth as much. So am I understanding it wrong or something?
Well, I'll let other people chime in, but one thing it makes me think of is, and I think a lot of people have pushed this maybe same idea, which is that, you know, a strengthening dollar or a prevalent dollar or a ever-increasing dollar occurs first in, well, you could see where it would come first internationally from people who have seen inflation and, you know, the debasement of their own currencies. And so they choose to use the dollar, which is now going to be easier through stable coins. And then it's like a rubber band where then that impacts to some degree us here in the U.S., the people who use U.S. dollars, because there are so many U.S. dollars. So I think, you know, then maybe some of these people would say, hey, maybe I should find something that can't just be printed. And, but I think this all takes time. And so, maybe some other people have some thoughts on this or want to chime in. But I do think that this all comes back to, no matter where dollars increase, it impacts us all in some form or fashion. And this is why we Bitcoin. So, anybody else want to chime in on that, or Tao, did that kind of help at all?
Yeah, no, I think we're thinking along the same lines, right? So like you said, anywhere that the dollar increases, whether it's in the US or whether it's a different country, if there's going to be more dollars, ultimately it's going to not be worth as much. So yeah, I do agree there.
Yeah, it's interesting too, maybe in light of that, maybe Coleman wants to continue to dance a little dance, because gold hit another new all-time high. And, so we do see this continued lack of confidence in the dollar based on Putin's, remarks. And obviously central banks continue to put pressure on the gold price by continuing to accumulate it and, not, accumulate U.S. treasuries. And so as much as, the stable coins, that we were just talking about, will be prevalent, central banks certainly are not interested in dollars or dollar denominated debt at this point, based on what they're seeing. And I think this kind of circles around back to kind of what Puncher's, topic was, right? Which is that it's going to be a bipolar world, and everything that we see is kind of pointing to that fact. So hopefully, you know, we're starting to put some of the pieces together. And, maybe before we close out the show, just other people want to chime in on that or, final thoughts. Wade, I know this topic is near and dear to your heart, so curious to hear your thoughts.
I just wanted to look back, just doing like a yearly review of the neutral reserve asset charts, specifically gold and Bitcoin. And I threw it up in the, I posted it in the space, and I'm just stunned at the price performance. I mean, just multiples over a 1 year time period. And just to see like gold and Bitcoin screaming the way they are, it just seems like something's wrong. I can't quite put my finger on it. I don't know where it's going. But I mean, I don't think we've ever historically seen price appreciation in neutral reserve assets at this clip before, have we?
I don't think so. I don't have all the data. Anybody else want to chime in on that? I'm sure there's been periods where hoarding of gold has happened, but maybe not to this degree.
Yeah, it certainly feels like. But it's kind of crazy, like that the movements are huge. And I, that's kind of like, I feel it because I did recently sell, some gold when Bitcoin was at 65,000. And I was like, man, did I sell at the wrong time, et cetera? But luckily, I bought Bitcoin with that, when I sold the gold. So in a way, well, I can't complain because it almost pretty much doubled. So it's kind of like, I think both, assets are tremendous. And it just goes to show that when you have something that's finite, and I'm gonna use this as my, you know, basic premise, right? The base premise is that, hey, you have something that's finite that has all the properties of money. There's just that way to go. That's why people have been, holding assets like this from the very beginning. And so why would that change, right? Why would that sort of thinking change when it's been around for thousands of years and now you have even a more pristine asset that can be programmable and can just be utilized in so many different ways? It's like a no-brainer, I guess.
Yeah, appreciate that. Did want to give people one last chance here. We're at the top of the hour. Any final thoughts, AC? You had a lot to say this morning. Anything you want to leave with everybody before we wrap it up? I struck out and I had to do it. Sorry about that. All right, guys. Well, that's a wrap. We do this every weekday, 10 a.m. Eastern. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the show this morning. I know we bounced around a lot, but do appreciate all the speakers, everybody who listens in the background. And please do follow the people that come up here. I think they're out to help you, and you should probably follow people who want to help you. But if you do have further questions on your Bitcoin journey, please do reach out to us, bitcoinveterans.org. You can fill out the Connect form. We'll get you plugged in to valuable resources to help you on your Bitcoin journey. But that's all we have for today. Want to wish you guys a wonderful Tuesday. And remember, do not shitcoin. It's like wearing cutoff jeans to a funeral.
And again, a lot of it is just driven by the baby boomers. So now let me explain to you why baby boomers suck. And they suck for three main reasons.
People that use fiat currency as a store of value. We call them core. We call them core.